Welcome back to The Sip, the podcast that shares a taste of the Coke scholars around the world who are igniting positive change. My name is Justin J. Pearson, and I'm a proud 2013 Coca-Cola scholar, originally from Memphis, Tennessee, and now living and working in Boston, focused on social and economic justice. For those who are listening and may not be a Coca-Cola scholar, welcome. We're glad you're here. To give you a little background, the Coca-Cola Scholars Foundation is the largest achievement-based and corporate-sponsored scholarship program in the country. Each year, it awards $20,000 to 150 high school seniors across the country who share a unique passion for service and leadership. It's a competitive program to get into, but once you're a Coke Scholar, the benefits go far beyond the money for college. You become part of this bigger family for life. If you want to learn more, you can visit their website, coca-colascholarsfoundation.org. In our fourth episode, 1997 scholar Jolene Letcher will be talking with Isabella Madrigal, a brand new Coke Scholar from the class of 2020. I have the pleasure of knowing Jolene as a personal friend through the Coke Scholars Network, and she's truly incredible. She's an entrepreneur, advocate, community builder, and social change maker. As one of the Midwest's leading voices for protecting children and advocating for survivors of child abuse and sexual assault, Jolene Letcher has put purpose to the pain of her childhood. Jolene started her career as an award-winning television reporter, but in sharing her own story, she learned the power of public policy to change lives. She's worked to repeal the statute of limitations on rape in South Dakota and is the namesake for Jolene's Law, which has created the Center for the Prevention of Child Maltreatment and guides South Dakota's plan to end child abuse by 2026. As an entrepreneur, Jolene is the CEO of the most honored same-day documentary and advertising agency, Mud Mile Communications, and its newest division, Adrenaline Sports Marketing. Jolene graduated top of her class from Northwestern University and received her MBA in Global Executive Leadership from the University of Nebraska. She's also South Dakota's first Presidential Leadership Scholar. She lives in Sioux Falls with her amazing husband, Nate Burdine, their beautiful daughter, Liberty, and pug, Mayhem Awesome. Now let's learn a little bit about Isabella. Isabella Madrigal is an enrolled member of the Kiwi'a Band of Indians and is of Chippewa descent. An avid writer and storyteller, her play and production of Menu and Her Heart earned Isabella her National Girl Scout Gold Award. The cast of the play consists of community members giving voice to the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women. She is the co-founder of the Native Storytelling Project, which seeks to reclaim the narrative surrounding the Indigenous experience. Isabella spoke at the United Nations Girls Speak Out event to address violence against women. Isabella is a 2020 Champion for Change through the Center for Native American Youth. Her passions include medicine, and change-making storytelling through writing and performance. It's so amazing to think about the impact Isabella is already making in our world, and she just graduated high school. I'm curious to hear what it's like to graduate in the midst of a pandemic while also creating change-making stories. Here's Jolene and Isabella.
I am so excited to welcome to the podcast and, of course, to the Coca-Cola family, one of our newest family members from the class of 2020, Isabella Madrigal, who is in beautiful Southern California. And welcome, Isabella, first of all, to the Coca-Cola family and then also to the podcast.
Thank you.
So you are the class of 2020, which... When we started organizing all of this, we had thought that I would get to meet you and do this interview in person at Scholars Weekend. Then, obviously, there was a global pandemic, which none of us had obviously anticipated happening. So we're doing this virtually now. But we want to, of course, have a chance to welcome you. And I know the class of 2020 did get to have a little bit of a virtual meetup. How was that for you and in coming into the Coca-Cola Scholars family experience?
Yeah, so that was just a couple of weeks ago, and that was kind of the first time that we got to see everyone, at least see their faces, which was something that was nice, even if we couldn't be all together in person. It was kind of an hour long, just kind of meet up with everyone. Kind of, we did some pop questions. Not everyone got to be introduced, but it was nice just to see beyond the Facebook, you know, what everyone was like, and more about the foundation as well, and kind of seeing that it's more than just a scholarship, which was something that was really neat to me. But kind of this network of alumni and current scholars who can, you know, help you out, and who have advice and who have obviously gone through a lot of the same things that we're going through right now.
For some of us, it was a little bit longer ago, but yes, we've all gone through. Though your end of senior year, start of college may be different than anyone else's, I think.
Yes, I think so.
But one of those things that is always universal to being a Koch scholar is the moment you find out.
So when I found out, it was actually around the same time that some of my college decisions were coming out. And so I remember kind of getting the email with my family. I think my mom was the first one to see it, which was so funny. So she's like, check your email. And I was so shocked because I had not really expected it. When you look at it and it's something like 90,000 applicants, it just seems like winning the lottery or something. I mean, it was just like almost like getting accepted into another university. It felt like that kind of similar thing.
Now, I had the chance to kind of read through some of your essays and your background and some of the things that you've done. And one of the things that I think is amazing when we talk about highly selective and very few things that people end up being able to go through and get to the end of. And that was your Girl Scout experience. And some of the things that you did that I think, you know, really speak to perseverance. And so tell me about that and what made that experience exceptional.
I kind of had an unconventional journey with that, with the Girl Scouts. And I had this project that I really wanted to do. And it was something that I'd been thinking about for a long time. And that was the Native Storytelling Project, which ended up kind of taking off and being a really exciting thing. And what the Girl Scouts offered is this Gold Award project path, and it has all these different mentors and steps and things kind of built in to really help you be able to achieve success and be able to see your project realized. And so for me, it was kind of the perfect way I saw to get this thing started. And so for that, I kind of ended up writing this play that had a lot to do with social justice, with my own identity as an American Indian. And, you know, putting on the play with community members was a huge part of it as well. And so it ended up being performed for the first time under that Gold Award project to a kind of a small gathering hall. And we ended up getting over 100 audience members. And from there, kind of the interest in the community sparked, because I think there was kind of a need and a calling for it. And I was able to take it to the Dragon Kim Foundation, and they've been sponsoring it for this past year. We've been able to tour the play. With the current situation, we kind of had to take a step back, but it's definitely been something that has been incredible and I think life-changing for me, and I think hopefully doing good in my own community as well.
I think too, when I hear about that in your play, it's also doing so much good in making people aware of the diversity of the American Indian experience. Were you surprised by any of the reactions that you got, or people that just weren't, you know, weren't aware?
The issue that the play deals with is missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. And I think that's definitely something that is hugely below kind of the national consciousness. And people don't know that, you know, Indigenous women and girls, they're going missing and going and being murdered at rates 10 times higher than the national average. And I think it's not that people don't care, or that, you know, a lot of people, if you bring the issue to them, they wouldn't be, you know, outraged or upset about it, but it's just that they don't know. And I think, you know, today, a modern form of bias or prejudice against American Indians is simply our invisibility, the fact that people aren't aware that we even exist or that we're still around. And that's why these things are allowed to continue to happen. And so the play for me, and I think art, is just this incredible way to bring forward these untold stories and help people become visible. And so it was kind of a two-part project: one, healing in the community, bringing art to the community that was done by the community for people inspired by kind of our old stories, because we do have so many stories that tell of, you know, our creation, our journey here, and how we fit into the present, which is so incredible and something that I feel a great responsibility to carry forward. But if it was also about, you know, reaching this larger audience. And I think that the play has been a great way to do that, because it deals with these, you know, fundamental issues of loss and continuation. And that's something that everyone, I think, can relate to on some level.
What's your writing process like? Because I think that's so unique to every artist. You know, do you have a certain place that you go? Is there you know, what does that process look like for you?
I think for me, when I sit down to write, I kind of know exactly what I want to say. And what's also really exciting is I think as I write, I make a lot of discoveries. And so, you know, as I put down one thing, I'm thinking about how it connects to this and how it'll kind of resolve in the end. You'll discover things even after you finish writing. Like for this play, I had written it all, and then we actually sat down with the cast for the first table read. And something that was brought up that I hadn't even realized was that there was kind of this duality in the message of the play. It tells the story of a young Indigenous woman who is taken, but also the story of one who must kind of make the decision to stay. And it hadn't really been so clear to me that it was a decision for my character Nisun to continue her life, and kind of deals with the other issue that we face in Indian country, especially with our youth and with our young women, which is suicide. And so I think you discover things even after you write, and you can just go back and kind of hone in on it and figure out if that's what you're trying to say. And it kind of all comes together. So it's been, yeah, it's just been really exciting to kind of figure out what works for me as a writer.
Do you personally feel that struggle of leaving and going, and where do I stay, and what does home look like, and how do I take it with me, as you are at this point in your life where you're looking to go out somewhere else? Yeah. That's completely different.
I've been lucky in that my family has been, you know, an incredibly supportive force, and I don't think that this project could have happened without them. You know, in partnering with my sister, that was something that the play is actually about two sisters, and she plays the other sister, and she does a lot of acting too. And so that's been really incredible. So it'll be different, you know, to be away. But I think, you know, this play has been a lot about grounding me in my own identity and who I am and who I want to be. And I think, kind of shifting the national narrative and reclaiming it, I think, is huge for Native people right now. And there's a huge movement to do that. And I'm incredibly inspired and want to be a part of it.
What do you think people get wrong the most when you talk about the narrative that it is out there? What do you think is the biggest misconception or just flat out wrong idea that people have?
I think, well, one of them at least is the fact that we don't exist anymore, right? That's a huge thing that people are completely unaware of, that I think there's a lot of portrayal of the Native American experience or the Indigenous experience globally as one of the victim. And I think that, you know, obviously historical trauma and plays a huge role into our lives today. And that's something that it's sometimes hard for people to understand and grasp, but I think there's a lot of resiliency in our past. And I think, you know, something that I would want to share at least is that we're still here and that we're continuing, and that the fact that we are still here to share these stories is so important. And I think a lot of people are willing to listen, which has been incredible. And so it's just, I think, really important to acknowledge the fact that we have so much history and so much stories, and there is so much room to move forward.
You said something earlier too about, you know, who you are and who you're going to be. So give me one sentence of who you are now and a sentence of who you're going to be.
Yes. So I think right now I'm a 17-year-old, you know, starting out artist. I've done a lot of work in my small community, but you know, as I get older, as I reach out, I hope that I'm able to have a larger reach, and I hope that I'm able to be more of a writer, because I think I'm just starting out in that, and there's so much room I have for growth. And so I hope that, you know, I have still continue to have this artistic presence, whether that be in acting or whether that be in writing, and that I can, you know, kind of build that network and change that narrative.
One of my favorite questions to ask new scholars is, where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Yes. So I guess by then I'll hopefully be graduated. And
yes. You'll be way older. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's wow. Oh, it seems so far away, but I'm very interested in kind of this idea of medicine and non-conventional forms of healing. And I think that art can be a healing modality, kind of just in sharing your voice and in processing things. And so I've always been really interested in going into medicine and kind of bringing that Indigenous perspective into healing. And that's kind of what I hope to study, you know, at school, as well as art. And I think they're all interconnected. And I think that there's kind of a new emerging field, seeing how the arts and how healing and how healthcare can really inform each other. And so it's so exciting that that's in kind of its early stages. So I can kind of help see it grow, and hopefully there'll be more out there by the time I enter, you know, the job market.
Do you have a person that really inspires you or has helped guide you to really look at that being where you will be in the future?
So I would definitely say my family, and in particular my father. He has just been an incredible force in this project. It definitely could not have happened without him. He was one of three young men responsible for kind of bringing back the Kuya bird songs, and there were three elders that still remembered them, and they were going to die, and the songs were going to die with them. And so the story goes, he kind of got together these friends, and they went over, and one of them was his brother, and they went over and they asked, you know, will you teach us these songs, we want to learn? And they're like, no, we will not teach you, you're not ready, which I think is always so funny, and I think very typical when you try to go seek out the ancient knowledge. You know, you have to do it in the right way. And so eventually they did end up teaching him the songs, and he kind of took that on. And now, you know, you can search on YouTube and see them, and hundreds of young men can sing them at all sorts of gatherings. And so that's incredibly inspiring, and kind of why I saw there was maybe an importance to kind of share the stories. And the play is inspired by about three traditional stories, kind of pre-colonial stories, and so it kind of brings that authentic perspective. And so I get a lot of my inspiration from him and all the work he's done in the community.
And you started dancing too, right? Doing some dance involved in some of this when you were really, really little?
Yes, that was kind of how I started. I did a lot of ballet, I guess, was kind of the major area that I did. And then it got to the point where I had to be on point, and I thought maybe I'd rather do theater. And so I actually go to a performing arts high school.
Your toes said no. Acting. You're like, no, yes. On the toes. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, something like four times a week. And I was like, okay, that's a commitment. Yeah.
So explain to me what is the bird dance?
How it goes is the men kind of sing the songs. And so they have these gourd rattles that are kind of accompanying that. And originally I think there were songs that could be sung from sunrise to sunset over 3 days. And obviously a lot of that has been lost. But we still have many of them, and the women dance, and it's a very, very simple dance. I guess the best way to describe it is kind of like a little bit of bobbing and jumping, but kind of in place. And it's very beautiful. Kind of depending on what tribe you are, you have different hand motions, and it's just part of the songs. But there's kind of a lot of freedom in it too, which is nice.
What do you feel when you're out there, and probably even more so when you're so young? What is that feeling like to be, you know, bringing culture and history and your family to life?
It's definitely, you know, at first it was really overwhelming. The idea of, you know, being, I was 16, I think, when I wrote the play, and it was kind of the first thing I'd ever really done on my own in terms of spearheading a huge project like that. And so it was really crazy how it all came together, because all the cast was non-professional actors, right? They're community members, some, most of whom who had never, you know, done a play or been on stage. And so
for me, it was incredibly intimidating. Stage left, stage right.
Yes, it was, because it was like, it was a workshop process to get them, you know, comfortable with kind of what performing is, and then directing it and also being a part of it. Those were kind of things that I'd never done before. And so it was really intimidating in many ways. And so I was trying to, we were only going to do it once, you know, and it was going to be small scale in this small gathering hall that we kind of converted into a theater space. But then kind of with the reaction we got, which was that this calling and this desire for more, then it ended up having a whole nother life. And that was pretty incredible. And I think as we've done it more times, obviously it gets easier every time, and you get to live in that character or the play. It makes it a lot easier.
What piece of art has personally inspired you the most? I mean, you're creating, but what someone else's creation that's really influenced you?
I love storytelling in all forms, whether that be film or theater. I've seen some incredible pieces just this year, which is so exciting to me, because I think that there is maybe a changing landscape. I was in New York over the summer, and I got to see this play that was recommended to me, The Way She Spoke, which also deals with missing and murdered Indigenous women in Mexico, which is a huge problem there. And so it was a one-woman show, and it was just so incredibly inspiring, and totally using art to kind of change the audience and to take a stand, which was really interesting to me, because, you know, not everything does that.
As you have evolved as an artist, what's been the biggest challenge or hurdle that you've faced in pushing your boundaries?
So, I mean, beyond just the fact that, you know, directing is in itself an art, and I really had no idea, you know, no plan about how to make this happen. I think I'm just so in awe by the fact that the community came together like this and decided to support me, because I was at first unsure. I think there's always this question of, especially when you're trying to maintain, you know, the authenticity of something that is old and so rooted in tradition, and then something that's new. This play is my interpretation of these stories, and it's part of a different telling. And so, you know, that was something that I was really hesitant about and wondering if it would be well received, because if it's not well received in the community, then it wouldn't have had a life beyond that. And so, you know, that was something I struggled with definitely at the beginning. But then, you know, as we continue to do it, I see it taking off, and that's been so important to me, to make sure that it was kind of done in the right way and that the, you know, we had the right support that we needed.
You are graduating at a time that is literally unlike any other. And I think for older scholars, probably even for some that are just a year older than you, this is it's kind of an interesting time for them to look back and go, well, I remember what my senior experience was in high school, but theirs is going to be completely different. Do you have any sense of loss or frustration that you don't have that traditional senior year, end of senior year?
Definitely. Someone just told me yesterday that it takes 28 days to break a habit. And so it's getting a little bit easier, you know, as we move forward. But it was definitely just such a shock because we kind of left school on Friday and expected to come back on Monday. And then we didn't. And there's just so many things you missed out on. And for me, you know, I've had a the school I go to, it's very artistic, and it has a conservatory program built in, and so a tight community built in, and so it's definitely was a disappointment, you know, not to be able to have hopefully, you know, a traditional graduation or all these things, that these milestones that you kind of look to, and so you know, that's too bad. And then looking forward, like, maybe we won't have that fall freshman year, so that's another thing. But obviously just taking it, you know, one day at a time, hoping that that things clear up soon.
How do you see this influencing your generation as you move, obviously, into college, but then into your careers and furthering your influence?
I think something, you know, at least for me, has been that, you know, it's just so unexpected, something that isn't not even on the radar of possibility, and suddenly it's your new reality. And so I think, you know, understanding that everything is so impermanent, and there really are no guarantees. And so maybe you have some regrets and things that you wish you had done differently, maybe just finishing off your high school year. I think that people are more aware of that. And also kind of, I've seen a lot of communities coming together during this time, kind of, you know, whether that being sewing masks or just, you know, giving food or donating things, and kind of realizing that your world can be so much different than someone else's. And you really have no idea what other people are going through or processing. And so I think that, you know, at times like these, sometimes you can see the best of humanity at the same time that you can see the worst. And so I think that, you know, that's truly inspiring, that I see so many people trying to help others, and trying to, you know, bring things to their own communities. And so I hope that people will kind of remember that, what they're feeling now in terms of wanting to help, and people have so much more time to kind of reevaluate what they want to do and who they want to be. And I think it's such a time that we wouldn't have gotten otherwise, especially as being a senior, you know, thinking about what I want to do for the next 4 years and what's going to be best for me. So I guess this time in that way can be kind of a nice pause, to be with family, to just be at home too.
What struck you the most about you in that pause, in that silence that you've been given?
I guess for me, it's kind of discovering that I really want to write. And I think that any way I'm going to be able to create any sort of change is going to be, I think, through writing my own narratives. And because a lot of the things that I've done in acting, you know, it's been sharing other people's stories, and there's just not a lot of, you know, roles out there for Indigenous people, especially not Indigenous women. I mean, I can't think really of hardly anything that has that perspective at the forefront. And I think that it's definitely a valid one, and I think one that people would be interested to see. And there's many universal things that go across all backgrounds. And so for me, that's kind of what it's been.
How do you get those stories and your stories out literally? Are you a pen and paper person? Are you a typing person? I think that's always interesting to see how an artist translates thoughts to paper.
Yeah. For me, I do a lot of computer, and I think that's just kind of generational. Like, you know, everything for school now is written online. It's hard to remember the last time I wrote anything down on paper. I really like to, before I sit down and write, just read, you know, something that I find really resounds with me, or something that I can really connect with, whether that be a poem or, you know, an excerpt from some sort of book or chapter, to kind of hear that voice really helps me kind of, it just makes it easier to flow. And so I think, you know, hearing other people's words always is super helpful to me as well.
All right. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Pop quiz. As we wrap up, we have something that we're asking everyone that joins us on the podcast, and that is the Fast Five. Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
Two apps or websites you can't live without.
I think that would have to be Instagram, and probably Spotify for music.
Ah, I love me some Instagram. All right. Can people follow you on Instagram?
Yes.
What's your handle?
It's just my name, Isabella.Madrigal with two L's at the end.
If I looked at the music on your iPhone right now, what would surprise me the most?
I think what would be pretty surprising is that I love a lot of the classics. I love 60s and 70s rock, which is always so funny to people. I do definitely have a playlist dedicated to that genre.
Next question. Favorite book or piece of music or art that has really inspired your life?
I think that would have to be the book Ceremony by Leslie Marmon Silko. And I kind of read that before I wrote the play. And it's so lyrical and poetic, and it's beautiful just the way she writes, but she parallels kind of this story with poems kind of telling these old traditional stories, which was a huge kind of influence for me in inspiring the play as well. But that book is amazing. So,
quote or motto you live your life by?
I think that would also be a quote by her. And that's, you know, you don't have anything if you don't have stories, she says, and you don't heal by forgetting, we heal by remembering. And I think that's so true.
I love that. Because that's beautiful. Yeah. That is so beautiful. I think it's true to the human experience, counter to what we think we want to do, right?
Right.
Forget. Right. But how much healing comes through that. Now, I know that you are a new Koch scholar. Your first experience with your class was a virtual one. But what do you think makes the Koch Scholars Network unique? And I'll modify it a little bit for you. Or what are you most excited about now that you are a Koch scholar?
Yeah. So when I applied for it, I kind of didn't realize that it was this whole network of people, or that there were so many past scholars. And so there's so many resources and this just really incredible opportunities. Like, it's not just a $20,000 scholarship, which is what I went in thinking that it was, but it's much more than that. And just even though I haven't, you know, met anyone in person, I've gotten emails and been able to connect with people on Facebook, which is a whole new thing for me because I don't really use Facebook. So I've had to kind of like create one and figure out how to use that. I like this opportunity is something that's so unique and to this network and to this group of people.
I'm going to ask you one more. I know we said fast five, but I'm going to make yours the quick six. We'll switch it up here because I know you, you've obviously done a lot of theater, and I think you've done quite a bit of Shakespeare.
Yes.
So your favorite line from any Shakespeare play?
I guess I'll just go with the Midsummer Night's Dream. Though she be but little, she is fierce. And I wish I was taller. So maybe I'm not incredibly sure, but I think, you know, that's just a great line.
All right. Well, I'm not even 5 feet tall. So that is
so perfect.
Yes. That's always one of my favorites. It was perfect. Yeah. I love it. Isabella, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the Koch Scholars family. We are so excited to have you and the other 149 scholars that I know have not had your Scholars Weekend, but it will be coming and we'll all get to meet you and hear about all the amazing and wonderful journeys that you have ahead of you and all the things you're going to do to change the world.
We hope you enjoyed the fourth episode of The Sip, featuring Jolene and Isabella. To learn more about the Native Storytelling Project and other things they discussed, check out our show notes or coca-colascholarsfoundation.org. Check back in a couple weeks when 1997 scholar Darren Roberts talked with 2013 scholar Maddie Pfaff, who created her own company, Maddie Co., to empower people to grow more, do more, and become more. We'll see you next time on The Sip.